Saw a commercial not too long ago where a guy's changing his oil in his Mustang inside a closed garage. And when he gets through, he opens up the garage and there are flying saucers and people are traveling different ways than just a regular Mustang. And the world looks different out there than what we might have been accustomed to. Of course, the commercial is advocating you'll have a classic then. You'll still be traveling, even though everybody else is traveling in airplanes and flying saucers and all that sort of thing. Our family is like that. We think about the changes that have happened in our society from the beginning of time to the 20th century. People were traveling horses and mules, and they had wagons. We read about them in the Bible. But when the 20th century came along, we find the automobile and all things like the horses and things of that sort became kind of obsolete. And things in our society has changed in the last 100 years that over centuries found very little change. We're going to the moon. We're going past the moon. Our lives are changing so rapidly. And as we come to the 21st century, I thought it might be good to think about the fact of the challenges that are changing out there that we have to face in our families. Not that they're new, but they are now entrenched. And they're things that are we're having to face that maybe other families have not had to face in the past, but we're having to do that. When we think of the family, we're thinking of the institution of marriage, and that is a husband and a wife, and those ideas are being challenged today. And when we think of a family, we're thinking about raising children. And indeed, that is a challenge that our families face. How are we going to raise them? Oh, there are different ways of doing that. And I think it's good to kind of look around us, open that garage and see the flying saucers coming by, see the different things that are occurring, and be ready to meet the challenges that may be involved in changing our thinking and therefore changing our family structure. When we examine these challenges, one of the first things is that we've got to be careful of our moral senses being dulled. And the Bible equips us. We need to still appreciate the fact that God holds marriage in honor among all men. Hebrews 13 and verse 4. That's a passage that we can equip ourselves. Let marriage be had in honor among just the religious fogies. They didn't say that. Oh, let marriage be had in honor among churchgoers. No, it's among all. And let the bed be undefiled. For adulterers and whoremongers, God will judge. So there is showing the importance of recognizing marriage. When God puts his judgment upon something, it shows the seriousness of that in his eyes. Marriage is to be honored. And therefore, those two particular sins that are brought together, the idea of adultery and fornication, the two concepts that's also involved in honoring marriage. When two people are married, you don't commit adultery. You're not unfaithful to your mate. Before you're married, you don't commit fornication or being a whoremonger. You honor marriage. And there is a passage that involves and helps us teach that. But what happens is that we find ourselves being dulled by those around us. How many at work have told you they've had an affair and nobody thinks much about it any longer? How many of you teachers have gone into the teacher lounge? And that's a good thing. That's not an alcoholic place. It's a teacher's lounge where you can get away from the kids for a while. And I've seen they've got good stuff in there. But you go there and all of a sudden you begin to hear people having affairs. These are our teachers at our schools. And it's kind of a commonplace. And what happens is that it's all around us, and all of a sudden, is that such a big deal any longer? We've got to keep our senses acute to Hebrews 13 and verse 4. Marriage is to be honored, and you have violated that. You don't care about that any longer. Young people are growing up, and going to college, and it is nothing to have different lovers and sexual relationships all through your college years. That's the way it is. And that may be the way it is. We open up our garage and we see that world. But we should not be so accustomed to it that it doesn't cause us to be to try to deal with that in our own lives. We're not going to let our senses be dull. You know, after all, in 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 3, we find that we are to be able to abstain from fornication. We're to be able to control our own bodies. And the Apostle Paul says this in chapter 4 and verse 3, "This is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you abstain from fornication." You keep yourself from fornication. "That each one of you know how to possess himself of his own vessel in sanctification and honor." And yet, look around you. What is our society? What is the consensus of society? Abstinence is unrealistic, you know. I remember when our children were growing up, I remember Kathy being told by ladies and that are involved in school that, well, they provide contraceptives for their daughters. After all, they're all going to do it. Now, that's way back there in the 70s and 80s, back there in the 20th century. But ladies and gentlemen, that thought has not escaped. That particular thought has been entrenched in society, and it's been entrenched in the people making legislation. Oh, just say no. Oh, you're so naive. Because after decades of entrenching that, it's just no way to do it. That you're going to all have to give in to that, so we have to have safe sex. Are your senses being dulled? God says this is God's will in the matter. Your sanctification and honor, you abstain from fornication. He didn't say, well, I know you're going to do it, so let's have safe sex. No, abstain from fornication. Our senses need to be acute. It needs to be sensitized by the Word of God instead of the consensus of society. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 10, you may never think of this passage dealing with homosexuality, but it is. And I please note the standard by which it goes against. He says, "For fornicators, for abusers of themselves with males," is literally what the Greek is saying. It says men. Now, fornication can be heterosexual. But in that context of fornication, there is abusers of themselves with males. There is your homosexual. And please note the standard, ladies and gentlemen, for what that is against. It is against or contrary to sound teaching. According to the gospel of the glory of the blessed God which was committed to my trust. Paul stood up in his time of the first century and said, here is fornication, here is another facet of that, men abusing themselves with one another sexually, and it is contrary to sound doctrine. Well, what doctrine? It's contrary to the gospel doctrine. He upheld that before us. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, we live in a time where we watch television and we're now to accept homosexuality. That's coming into your rooms. And some of you have your children with TVs in their bedrooms. But it's coming into our houses. And it desensitizes us. They say, well, I know that's not my style of living, but are your senses being dulled that some of the popular programs today are there and they give it place, homosexuality? This has changed in my lifetime. I remember distinctly working in a gas station, and a man that we would call a queer back in my day walked up in the service station, and a man that worked with me went out to meet him, and the man that I worked with decked him and left him out in the sidewalk cold as a cucumber. And we didn't think anything about it. Well, was he? He's a queer. No wonder they stayed in the closet so long. because our society said, no way, you're different, and that's not good. Well, it's not right to knock a fellow out. I'm not advocating that. That's not good. But we're in a society where you don't even say what I've just said in 1 Timothy 1 without it being hate speech in the eyes of many. We're living in that time. So you know what? Hey, let them have their place. Now, it's gotten to the point where now they have homosexuals giving ratings of television shows if we have enough representation, and do you portray us in a good way? If not, we're going to expose Fox. We're going to expose ABC. We're going to expose you that you're not treating the homosexual right. That's a challenge to our time. That is a challenge to the moral senses. And we as our families are going to say, well, that's coming in. Well, I'm going to stand up against it. We're not going to watch that show. And there may be popular shows you don't even think that's praising that, because we've become so dulled with that. It's so humorous. That's the way it works. And yet the Bible, I just use one passage. We could use Romans 1. We can use 1 Corinthians 6. The Bible is saying this is sin. This is what sends your soul to hell. This is against the natural order of things. And we open up our garage door to see how our family functions in this new world. There's your new world. But there are the passages that we must keep in mind, that we're not going to allow our moral senses to be dulled. That's a challenge to our families. And we need to be prepared for it. Secondly, there's the devaluing of human life. Is a challenge in our day. It's been brewing for quite a while. But we need to be reminded that in Genesis 1 and verse 27, God made man in his own image. There's not one animal that was ever created in the image of God. We all have been created. We haven't evolved from a monkey. We all have the image of God. And God recognizes that, to the point that in Genesis the 9th chapter, after the flood, and as man is going to start over again in this world where it had been plagued with unrighteousness, here was a law that was given. And it hadn't changed as far as men being created in God's image. That if a man sheds blood of his fellow man, then his blood shall be shed. Why, God? Because he created in the image of God. It's all right to kill a deer. It's all right to kill a pig. It's all right to kill a cow. Those are animals. You're not to be sent up for murder of those things. But man was different. Human life is something that God honors. And we're finding that devalued in our time. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, verses 21 and 22, God, Jesus Christ here, gets to the bottom of what's behind the sin of murder. All you've heard is said, thou shalt not kill, meaning to take innocent life. But he even talks about the fact of one, well, who is angry with his brother in a way that is not wholesome. It's not righteous. What about the fellow that calls a man raka, which is a term of contempt? What about if he calls him a fool? He's going to be in danger of hellfire. Why is Jesus saying that? Because he gets at the mindset behind taking innocent life. I just don't think you have a right to exist, moron. You're a fool. I have so much contempt for you that you don't mind taking a gun and doing away with them. Jesus says we're not to have that kind of heart. And yet, through movies, sometimes television, the violence that comes around is just that. You're in my way, so I don't have a problem of taking your life. We don't have that sense of that any longer. So therefore, what we have is that we've been taught in our schools that the evolutionary theory of man is accepted as a fact. That's supposed to be science. You're not supposed to question it. It is something that we lay out there and it's entrenched in people's mind. If I am just a high-class animal, then I know maybe I have a little more rights than that rat over here, but eventually, if I'm causing so much trouble as that rat, then you can take me out. When I was with Dennis, there are 35 cats in his property, and he traps them. And if the lady that has the 35 cats doesn't like that cat, Dennis's boys take him out and they shoot him. They get rid of him. Well, I was hoping I wouldn't stand around and get trapped one day. I'm just like a cat, stray cat. We don't know who you are. I wonder if I'm in a way of my family one day. I'm too much of a burden upon them. We've been taught, and it's entrenched in our society, that, well, let's have a good death, like we put our pooch to death. Let's just have a good death for old Jerry. You know, he's lived a good life, but he's just no use anymore. That concept is in our society. And therefore we find, well, where does it come from? It comes from the idea that we're just a high order of animals. No, we're made in the image of God. And we have to be remembering that. What about school violence? Well, that's been around for a while, and it will be around. See things up in Colorado. When I was up there, I went back to the Columbine High School, and while I was there, they had another shooting a little bit distance from there that had everybody thinking about Columbine. And you have them come up. What happens? A student is not treated right by another student. I'm going to tell you, I don't like the way you're treating me. A teacher may kind of come down with authority upon a student, and they don't like that. So we're going to take a gun, and we're going to end their life. It's been entrenched in families. It's been entrenched in people that live in a society. So what do we have? School violence. That's something our families face in our day and time. Why is that? Because we live in a society that's devalued human life. And we've seen this for quite a while, haven't we? Statistics have been going every year, over 1 million babies. I call them murdered. A lot of it is because, well, it's not convenient for me to have this baby. It's going to be too much of a hardship upon me. Very rarely do you have them happening because of the health of the mother. It's because it's a matter of convenience, and it's a matter of birth control. When the contraceptive doesn't work, we have our ace in the hole. We'll take care of this unwanted pregnancy. And we live in a society we don't even think about it much anymore because it's legal. And therefore, it just goes by. Well, that's devaluing human life. And I remind you that babe in the room in Luke 1:41, that same word that described the babe in the room is describing that babe in Luke 2 and verse 16 that's outside the womb. The Greeks had one word, and it described the babe in the womb, the babe outside the womb. And we get all bothered by, partial birth abortion. We just don't like to think of it much, but we'll accept it as time goes. And it won't, because we're working from the other end, euthanasia, for when you get too old and we don't want you any longer. You've been out of the womb for a long time. And we don't value your life. We won't value this life either. Friends, that's the society we're looking at. Raise up the garage and look around you. And what you have to do, and your family, is that we're going to respect human life. And we're going to have to meet that with teaching so that we can raise our children the way we should. Thirdly, there's a devaluation of man and woman in marriage. and the disappearance of leadership role of fathers in the family. I think we see that. Men and women in marriage, we don't need that. And yet when we read in our Bibles, in Matthew 19, 4 and 5, God made male and female. And because of this, he said that the father was to leave her father and mother, a man's to leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Marriage was for male and female. And yet our society says we don't need a male and a female. In fact, some lesbians say we don't even need a man. That's what's on the airways. That's what's being promoted on The View. That's what's being brought into the hearts of young women. And we live in that time where we're devaluing the fact that here is a family of a father and mother. That is so out of date. That is so old-fashioned. It's kind of like a Mustang driving around when we're flying high with our flying saucers. And we have to remind ourselves that's the way God planned it. And what impresses me is the fact that when God placed his son in a family, he didn't need a man either. Jesus was not born of the mixture of bloods of male and female. Galatians 4 and verse 4 says he was born of woman. God didn't need a male, but he put Jesus in the structure of a family that had Joseph as father and Mary as mother. Now you may think "father knows best" was a show out of date and not realistic. I want to tell you, God who created you knows best. And we'll be wise to remember that. He didn't need a man either. But he put Jesus in a family that had a father and a mother. And what about the roles of the father? Ephesians 5:23, the husband is to be the head of the wife, not treating her like a slave, not dictator, but a loving head, one who guides, one who leads, one who cares and shows the proper love. Fathers are to not provoke their children under wrath, but raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Fathers are not to cause their children and raise them up in such a way that they will be disappointed, despondent, and discouraged. Fathers have a role, and they need to meet that role. But they have a role in the family that God has set forth. And the challenge is, we don't need that. Because after all, we have the idea of a man, we don't need him, and we have the equal rights of women. The idea of a woman submitting herself to the man is just so out of date and so old-fashioned. We live in that time. And yet Sarah lived in a time where it was an honor for her to call her husband Lord. And what God says is that we, as women, need to clothe ourselves in this meek and quiet spirit. There's that willingness to submit ourselves under the authority of the husband and to be okay with that. There's that quiet spirit. Because she realized God has designed man to be the head. That's what we have to remind ourselves. That's the challenge of our 21st century. Because what comes through the airwaves? What comes around us? I remember two members of this church many, many years ago. They left us. But she said it's a 50-50 deal. You know, I don't submit to him. I know ladies who will not wear the name of their husband. Some do it for professional reasons. I'm going to carry my own name. There's not the idea that I'm going to submit and carry his name. I'm not going to do anything like that because it's 50-50. I have my rights. And that's crept into our society. That's been exalted as being making a strong woman. And that's a challenge to our families. It's tearing our structure of our families apart. And we have to rise up and realize we're going to meet that. What are you going to meet it with? I'm going to go back to what the Word of God would have for our families, and we'll be strong families. And ladies and gentlemen, with that kind of structure, you can't improve upon it. When everybody is doing their part and serving God as they need to serve God. What about distortion of priorities? That's a big problem in our time. Of things about us. And the Bible speaks of the fact in Luke 12 and verse 15 that life does not consist of the abundance of things which we possess, but the world doesn't act that way. The more toys you have, the more things you have, the designer labels is indeed important. To little six-year-olds, to kids in their young ages. What's been interesting is to see, and I don't remember the basketball player's name, is a professional basketball player. He's trying to change the thoughts of young people, and he's put out a tennis shoe that you can get for about $15. Quality's pretty good. They're not selling. Why? Because I know that's a $15 shoe. I want the designer label that says, everybody, I paid $100 plus for mine. Why is that? It's because we've been taught and we've been influenced. This is what stands out in society. This is what says a lot about me, and therefore I want that item. And yet life, Jesus said, doesn't consist of that. What it consists of, verse 21, are those who are rich toward God. And you have to have a spiritual mind to deal with this challenge of all the things that we can have. Think about it. You can get any type of food you want to. Just go down Fairmont, you can get about all you want. We can get it through the drive-thru. We don't have to wait, milk a cow or kill a pig or a cow or anything like that. We have fast food. And we have spending money that we probably don't even blink at. Let's go see a movie. Let's go do this and go do that. We live in an affluent time that has blessings, but also can cause us to be thinking about things the wrong way. And Luke 12 has said, you guard yourself from covetousness, of wanting this and wanting that. And the rich man, as he says, was all about him and not rich toward God. And that's what we have to understand is the spiritual. And I want to use Paul as an example. Turn with me to Philippians, the fourth chapter. Here's a man that's thinking in the spiritual realm in light of physical blessings. And we could see this a number of places, but I think this is an interesting one. Paul says, I can do all things in him that strengtheth me. We all know that passage, verse 13. Howbeit, ye did well that ye had fellowship with my affliction. And ye yourselves also know, ye Philippians, that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church had fellowship with me in the matter of giving and receiving, but ye only. And I remember, he's going to remember the amount he got. He's going to remember how much money he got or how much food he got. No. For even in Thessalonica, you sent once again to my need, listen to this, not that I seek for the gift, but I seek for the fruit that increaseth to your account. The fruit. You mean they got paid more than they gave? You mean they got more money than you did, Paul? He said, I'm not even thinking about it. You did well because it shows you're responding to the spiritual needs and preaching the gospel. And I seek for the fruit that increaseth to your account. Look at verse 18. But I have all things in abound. I am filled, having received from Epaphroditus the things that come from you. Listen to this. An odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. He's got his spiritual mentality out there, doesn't he? I'm looking for the fruit that increases your account of what you did. I see it as an odor of a sweet smell going up to God. That's the spiritual connotation of physical blessings. And we get caught up in the designer label. We get caught up how much money you make in your job. How many figures are you pulling in now? That's supposed to make us better? No. Jesus said, that's not what life's about. It's being rich toward God. And it's a matter of priorities, because the Bible doesn't condemn us and being rich. He says in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 6 that we need to be content with what we have. That is what is great gain, along with godliness. Godliness with contentment is great gain. But in verses 17 following, charge them rich in this present world that they be not high-minded, have their hope on the uncertainty of riches. He's not condemning them for having things, but it's our attitude toward them. It's the one who desires and has this temptation and this love to be rich. That's the attitude about our money is what's wrong. And we have to realize, I've got to set priorities in my family. And yet, designer labels come up. What are you going to wear to school? What are schools doing? Well, we'll all wear the same thing. That'll answer that problem. We'll make them look the same. Oh, they wear blue. They have different colors. But we're going to take care of that problem. No, we're maybe taking care of the problem in the school, but the heart's not changed. Because a guy won't buy the $25 or $15 tennis shoes that has a professional basketball player's name on it, because everybody knows it's cheap. I want something expensive. Oh, it may bankrupt Dad and Mom, but that's what I want. I remember being embarrassed for having Montgomery Ward underwear, because I wanted Fruit of the Loom. I know my hats are not very exalted, but all my buddies, they had Fruit of the Loom, and they were more expensive in my day than old Montgomery Ward's, but that's what my mama got. Times have changed a lot. It's not about underwear. It's about your designer jeans. It's what kind of purse you carry on your shoulder, ladies. Oh, that's a knockoff. Oh, that's a genuine thing. And we look at our self-worth for that. It's not only that. Designer labels, what you drive. What car you driving. That's in our society. That is a mindset that says something special about you. I know I look at a Mercedes different than I do if I saw them again, a Pinto. Or our cars like that. That's a nice-looking car. We know how it could cost a lot of money. And our kids, they're no longer wanting Mercedes-Benz. They want Ferraris because they can put them up on their room and they can see what that's like. They have no idea what they cost. They don't care. That's what I want. And they've already got the color picked out. And it's not only what you drive and your designer labels, but where and in what you live in. That's important to a lot of people in society. It's your neighborhood. It's the house that you have. And we live in a time where interest rates are such that people could get in the house and they get over their head with adjusted rate mortgages and the bubble is busting. But that's what we desire, because that makes us feel maybe that we're special. I don't know. But see, I'm saying you don't feel that way, or you know, but it's happening around us. Society feels that way. And they look at you differently if you're not on that fast track. And all this is about things. 1 Peter 2 and verse 11, we are to abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. There's the battle. There's the fleshly lusts, there's the things of this world, and there's our spiritual side. And one of the things that fathers are going to have to do to stand up in their families is to make sure we have spiritual priorities. Spiritual comes first. And yes, we enjoy things. And the things that we have enjoyed, we realize they came from God. And God has given us richly all things to enjoy. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17. It's not sinful to have things. It is sinful to make those things a standard for our self-worth and our standard of what we're after. Guard yourself from covetousness. It's a priority thing that we're going to have to fight. That's a challenge in our families as we raise our kids. And as they look around them and see the affluent society, we want this and we want that. And I think we'll look better if we have this. We've got to work on that and involve ourselves that way. My last point. I think about Noah. And the word that comes to mind is righteous. And what we're doing in looking at the challenges, we've got to make up our mind, fathers, that as we lead our families, that we stand up for what's right. Noah was a righteous man in a very wicked world. For 120 years, he stood up and preached righteousness. How telling people how to go in the right way. And that's what we have to make up our mind about. It is not righteous to condone or have our senses dulled and thinking homosexuality will be acceptable. It's not righteous to not value innocent human life in the womb or outside it. It is not righteous to be involved in devaluing the idea that there's a male and a female for marriage. That's what holds our society together. And people want to change that. We have to speak up and we have to make sure when that comes into our homes, we're going to make those changes. We may have to turn the knob or we're not going to watch that DVD. We have control over that. And righteous fathers are going to have to stand up and lead in the ways of righteousness. And we can do that. But we need to be aware what's out there. Is our morals being dull? Our moral sensitivity? Are we being kind of carried along and making priorities that deal more with the temporal than the spiritual? Guard against that. We need to be awakened to those things and to make changes if we need to. The gospel will save us from sin, and it's the spiritual emphasis. And when we control the spirit, we'll be able to control our bodies. And control those things. We can fight that war against the flesh that wars against our soul. But if you're outside of Christ, then you're not right with God. You're not righteous. He can make you righteous in Christ. And we ask you, if you haven't ever obeyed the gospel, to do so now. Be right with God as we stand and as we sing.